Graham Mount, Professor Emeritus of Laurentian University's Department of History in Sudbury, Ontario, and this is the fourth in a series of podcasts about travels in search of history. Podcast number one dealt with an unforeseen stumble into late medieval Scotland. Podcast number two dealt with another unforeseen experience, an opportunity to witness history in the making along the boundary between Costa Rica and Nicaragua. Podcast number three dealt with the ancient and medieval city of Ephesus in what is now Turkey. This fourth podcast discusses Hungary in the summer of 1989, that country's last summer with the communist government and under Soviet occupation. For further information and accompanying photographs, see my recently published book, Historic Pictures, Photos of Places in Transition, published in Toronto by Telwell in 2025. Cold War tensions were easing as my wife, Joan, our 11-year-old son, Andrew, and I went to Europe in the summer of 1989. But it never dawned on us that we would witness an important stage in the ending of the Cold War. We had not realized that 1989 would be a year of revolutions across communist Europe, Europe's most pivotal year since 1945. Poles had already elected a non-communist government, which Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev had said that the Soviet Union would accept. Then events in Hungary would unravel East Germany and inspire other Soviet-dominated peoples to move forward. In 1952, the government of communist East Germany sealed the inter-German border, and in 1961, it built the Berlin Wall. The East German economy needed a stable labor force if it were to survive. Too many skilled laborers and professional people were fleeing to the West and failing to appear at their jobs. East Germans were allowed to travel to other communist countries from which their government trusted them to return home. Other communist countries had a lower standard of living than East Germany, and few East Germans knew how to speak Czech, Hungarian, or Polish. What happened in Hungary during the warm months of 1989 led to what would happen at the Berlin Wall on the 9th of November that year. Given what we now know about the state of the Soviet economy at the time, East German authorities would probably have had to open their borders at some point within the next couple of years. But if what we witnessed did not actually force the hand of East Germany's leaders, they certainly provided a catalyst. Joan, her brother Jim, Andrew, and I drove across the border from Austria into Hungary on the afternoon of Saturday, August the 19th. Crossing was not easy. As Canadians, we still needed visas to go to Hungary. And the proprietor of our guest house in Vienna warned us to purchase them at the Hungarian embassy. There would be pandemonium at the border, she warned, as thousands of Austrian campers would want to spend that summer weekend on the shores of Lake Balaton in Hungary's southwest. I spent much of Friday at the Hungarian embassy in Vienna, which offered two choices. We could pay for our visas, leave our passports and return the following week, or we could pay a higher price for same-day service. Given our schedule, I had to choose same-day service. Even with visas in hand, we had to spend hours at the border. It seemed that everyone and his brother wanted to cross. As they idled, many cars ran out of fuel, and their occupants had to push them from Austria into Hungary. We had a Saab, purchased in Sweden for delivery in Canada after several months in Europe, and it required lead-free gasoline. Having heard negative reports about gasoline in communist countries, I filled the tank in Vienna, and after studying the map, decided that we could make the round trip from Vienna to Budapest with enough gasoline left for driving within Hungary. However, by the time we crossed, I realized that unless we could find a lead-free outlet, we would have to park the car in Budapest and save what was left for the return trip. Fortunately, a Hungarian friend knew of a hotel which catered to Western tourists and had a lead-free pump, perhaps the only one in Hungary at the time. Architecturally, Budapest was beautiful, but the air pollution was terrible, an affliction common to cities of communist Europe. Among the places we visited was the Soviet War Memorial, where Soviet soldiers stood on guard. The monument had been erected by Soviet authorities to commemorate the Red Army's defeat of the Nazis in 1945. Those Soviet soldiers would return to their homeland a few months hence. In October and November 1956, Hungarians had staged the bloodiest revolt against the Soviet occupation of Eastern and East Central Europe that would take place between the initial occupation in 1944-45 and the end of communist rule in 1989. Between the 23rd of October 1956, when the rebellion began with Hungarians pulling down the statue of Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin, who had died 3 years earlier, and the 4th of November, when Soviet forces reestablished control, an estimated 2,700 Hungarians died fighting the Soviet occupiers. An estimated 200,000 Hungarians, 2% of the total population, fled the country. In the aftermath of the conflict, 341 Hungarians were tried and executed, another 22,000 imprisoned. Some 13,000 went to internment camps, and others lost their jobs. The 1956 rebellion revealed Hungarians' lack of appreciation for the supposed liberation of 1945. And in 1991, 2 years after our visit to Hungary, the last Soviet soldiers left Hungary totally unlamented. East Germans could travel to Hungary and Poland. And in the summer of 1989, large numbers entered the grounds of the West German embassies in Budapest and Warsaw in search of political asylum. Under the laws of the Federal Republic of Germany, West Germany, East Germans were citizens of the Federal Republic of Germany. West German diplomats could not expel them or send them back to East Germany. What should be done with them? After days of deliberation, East German authorities allowed them to go to West Germany. Needless to say, we went to the West German embassy in Budapest to see what might be happening. In downtown Budapest that same Sunday, 20th of August, 1989, political parties were already campaigning for the country's first multi-party election since the 31st of August, 1947, staged under questionable circumstances. According to historian Anne Applebaum, in 1947, communist organizers had struck the names of hundreds of thousands from voters' lists, appointed the scrutineers, and sent gangs of thugs to destroy meetings of other parties. One Hungarian nationalist, that Sunday when we were in Budapest, was reminding voters that at Trianon, a suburb of Paris in 1920, diplomats from countries that had fought the Austro-Hungarian Empire had stripped Hungary of territory as punishment for its role in World War I and as a reward to countries which had fought on the Allied side. Some of the lost territory went to Yugoslavia, successor state of Serbia, and some previously Hungarian territory went to Czechoslovakia. By 1989, Hungarian irredentism was still alive. More than 30 years later, the national boundaries Hungary remained a contentious issue, even after Hungary no longer had a communist government. In 2020, on the centennial of the Treaty of Trianon, the Hungarian government led by Viktor Orban erected a marble monument with an eternal flame outside the parliament buildings in Budapest. It identified all the towns and villages cited in the census of 1910, Hungary's last before World War I and the Treaty of Trianon. Under pressure from the victorious allies, noted a BBC report, quote, two medium-ranking Hungarian officials signed away two-thirds of their country and 3.3 million of their compatriots, unquote. In November 2022, during the FIFA World Cup in Qatar, Orban wore a scarf so provocative that both the Romanian and Ukrainian governments protested. The scarf included a map with its pre-World War I boundaries. As late as 2023, an estimated 1.2 million Hungarians continued to live in Romania, 150,000 in Ukraine. Others lived in Austria, Croatia, Serbia, and Slovakia. Throughout August 1989, East Germans who had gone in their cars or by train to Hungary as tourists vacationed along the shores of Lake Balaton, a large and warm lake ideal for camping and recreation. With the removal of the barbed wire between Austria and Hungary earlier that year, they saw an opportunity to escape, first into Austria, and then onward into West Germany. Our host in Budapest shook with laughter the morning of Sunday, August the 20th, as he related the lead item in the morning news. Marathon runners were racing across Europe, and as they crossed the border between Hungary and Austria, they could do so without having to undergo the normal formalities. East German campers, dressed in t-shirts and shorts, joined the race and made their way into Austria, from which they could easily go to West Germany. Hungarian border officials pretended not to notice what was happening. We left Hungary a few days later via Sopron, just inside the Hungarian border. In 1956, Sopron had been the site of a forestry school. As Soviet forces crushed the rebellion, professors and students fled across the border into Austria, while the border remained open. The forestry school at the University of British Columbia offered to accept all Sopron's students and professors. Our exit from Hungary via Sopron proved memorable for another reason. The border midweek was quiet, not at all like what we had experienced the previous Saturday. The friendly Hungarian official chatted with us. It was a hot day, and the roof of our Saab was open. Andrew popped up through the opening, and he and the official shook hands and laughed. Then the officer turned serious. He asked us to open the trunk, and with a broom handle, he poked vigorously. Any East German whom we might have hidden in the trunk would have yelped. As we had nobody in the trunk, we received permission to proceed into Austria. The East German story continued to unravel. Many of the campers who had gone to Lake Balaton remained in place and challenged Hungarian authorities to let them drive into Austria. With the approach of cooler weather, time for a solution was limited. The Hungarian government wanted good relations with the West, especially with affluent West Germany. And it is reasonable to assume that the West German government offered its Hungarian counterpart a substantial bribe. On the 11th of September, 1989, to the dismay and displeasure of the East German government, Hungary opened its border and allowed all the East German campers to cross into Austria with their cars and other possessions. In the aftermath of the Great Escape, East German authorities declared Hungary off limits to citizens of the so-called German Democratic Republic. Unable to go to Hungary, East Germans then went to Czechoslovakia or the Czech Republic. They swarmed the West German embassy in Prague, and in doing so, alarmed Czechoslovakia's communist authorities. Czechoslovakia's communist government did not want the East Germans to give ideas to the Czechs and Slovaks. Ranking political stability ahead of communist brotherhood, Czechoslovakia's communist government opened its border with West Germany. The Berlin Wall became an inconvenience instead of a barrier. On November the 9th, East Germany's government agreed to open and remove the wall. On the 3rd of October, 1990, West Germany absorbed East Germany, which ceased to exist.